is confirmed. Press 0 for detailed instructions.
Good morning, and welcome to the Agree Realty Third Quarter 2015 Earnings Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by 0. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Joey Agree, President and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Carrie. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for Agree Realty's third quarter 2015 earnings conference call. Joining me today is Ken Howe, our Interim Chief Financial Officer. I am very pleased to report our strong third quarter results and believe that our performance further establishes the unique capabilities of our retail net lease platform. During the quarter, we continued to scale the company via our three external growth platforms, demonstrated by a 33% increase in rental revenues, while also remaining acutely focused on actively managing our existing portfolio, disposing of approximately $20 million of non-core assets. The result was nearly 11% FFO as well as 7% AFFO growth on a per-share basis. At the end of the quarter, our real estate portfolio consisted of 263 properties located in 41 states and encompassing over 4.8 million square feet of gross leasable area. As of September 30th, the total portfolio had a weighted average remaining lease term of 11.8 years, and investment-grade retailers generated 52.6% of annualized base rent. Specifically, our net lease portfolio had a weighted average remaining lease term of 12 years, and investment-grade retailers generated 53.2% of annualized rents. At quarter end, the portfolio was effectively fully occupied at 99.5%. These metrics continue to reflect the high-quality nature of our portfolio and continue to be among the strongest of our peers. 9.5% of our portfolio is ground leased to industry-leading retailers, including Wawa, Lowe's, Chase, McDonald's, and Aldi. These ground lease assets are typically valued at minimum 75 basis points inside of a comparative traditional turnkey lease. On the acquisition front, during the third quarter, we invested approximately $37 million and remained disciplined and focused on our underwriting criteria. We closed on 15 properties net leased to nine diverse retail tenants operating in six e-commerce resistant sectors. These properties are located in nine states and are occupied by leading national and super regional retailers, including Bed Bath & Beyond, Michaels, Mattress Firm, AT&T, and Maurice's. The weighted average cap rate on our third quarter acquisitions was 8.1%, and the weighted average lease term was 12.4 years. Both metrics are consistent with our historical acquisitions. Year-to-date, we have acquired 59 properties for a total purchase price of approximately $160 million, surpassing our previous record of $147 million acquired in 2014. These properties were acquired at a weighted average cap rate of just over 8%. We remain on track to achieve our targeted 2015 acquisition volume of $175 to $200 million and are currently conducting diligence on a number of opportunities, including potential investments in the auto parts, apparel, and home furnishing sectors, among others. On the development front, subsequent to quarter end, we announced the commencement of another Wawa convenience store with fuel in Orlando, Florida. The project is pre-leased under a 20-year ground lease and is expected to be complete during the third quarter of 2016. Our Hobby Lobby project in Springfield, Ohio, continues to progress as well. We anticipate completion and rent commencement by the end of the second quarter of 2016. In Salem, Oregon, our cash and carry joint venture capital solutions project remains on track to be complete during the first quarter of 2016. The company will own 100% fee simple interest in the project upon completion. We also continue to make significant progress on the previously discussed projects at the recently created Outlots in Lakeland, Florida, as well as Capitol Plaza in Frankfort, Kentucky. We look forward to discussing both projects in more detail in the near future. We were very active during the quarter on the disposition front. We sold four properties for gross proceeds of $19.8 million, including two non-core shopping centers in Big Rapids, Michigan, as well as Lakeland, Florida. Our shopping center portfolio now consists of three assets, two of which we believe have significant embedded growth opportunities and have rental rates which are significantly below market, as well as additional outlet creation opportunity. Over the past 19 months, we have disposed of six shopping center assets and announced outlet creation at two additional assets. I am extremely pleased with our asset management team, led by Leith Hermes, our executive vice president, and the transformational efforts he has overseen. Today, our shopping center exposure represents only 2.7% of our annualized base rental income, as opposed to the nearly 30% in early 2010. As everyone saw in our press release, our material tenant concentrations over 1.5% represent a list of the country's leading brick-and-mortar retailers. Notably, Kmart is no longer one of the company's top 20 tenants. We recently increased our disposition guidance from $25 million to $40 to $50 million for the year. While we remain focused on scaling the portfolio, we are also continuously evaluating all of our real estate assets and will consistently pursue the disposition of assets that no longer meet our objectives. From a lease maturity perspective, our portfolio is in great shape. We have one immaterial lease expiration remaining in 2015, and only two leases, or less than 0.5%, expiring in all of 2016. As we enter into the fourth quarter, we are very enthusiastic about the outlook for our company. As Ken will discuss in further detail, our balance sheet is in fantastic position to continue to execute on our unique operating strategy. Net debt to EBITDA is at the bottom end of our range at 5x, and net of cash, we have near full capacity on our revolving credit facility. With a first-class portfolio and a clean balance sheet, we are very well positioned to take advantage of opportunities as they arise. With that, I'll turn it over to Ken to discuss our financial results.
Thanks, Joey. Good morning, everyone. As a reminder, please note that during this call, we make certain statements that may be considered forward-looking under federal securities law. Our actual results may differ significantly from the matters discussed in any forward-looking statements. In addition, we discuss non-GAAP financial measures, including funds from operations, or FFO, and adjusted funds from operations, AFFO. Reconciliations of these non-GAAP financial measures to the most directly comparable GAAP measures can be found in our earnings release. As announced yesterday, for the third quarter of 2015, we reported total rental revenue of $16.7 million, an increase of 32.8% over the third quarter of 2014. FFO for the quarter was $11.2 million, an increase of 35.1% over 2014, and AFFO was $11.1 million, an increase of 31.8% over 2014. On a per-share basis, FFO of 61 cents was an increase of 10.9% over Q3 2014, and AFFO of 60 cents was an increase of 7.1% over Q3 for 2014. G&A expenses were approximately 9.9% of total revenue for the quarter, as compared to 12.7% in the third quarter of 2014. For the full year 2015, we expect G&A as a percentage of total revenue to be under 10.5%, and we anticipate G&A as a percentage of total revenues to be in the single digits in 2016, representing over a 600 basis point improvement since 2011 as the company continues to benefit from operating leverage. Moving on to the balance sheet, we remain in a favorable position as the company continues to maintain a strong credit profile. Total debt to total market capitalization at September 30th was 36.4%. Net debt to recurring EBITDA was 5x. These metrics are well within our targeted leverage levels. Fixed charge coverage, which includes principal amortization, remained robust at 3.6x. We utilized the ATM program to raise approximately $25.5 million of gross equity proceeds during the quarter as we look to optimize our efficiency when raising and deploying capital. From a liquidity standpoint, we had $123 million of capacity on our revolver, as well as $21.4 million in cash on hand at the end of the quarter. The company has no debt maturing in 2015 and only $8.6 million coming due in 2016. The company paid its 86th consecutive quarterly cash dividend since its IPO in 1994. Our payout ratios for the quarter, which were 76.2 and 77% of FFO and AFFO respectively, are at the low end of our target range and imply a very well-covered dividend. With that, I'll turn the call back to Joey.
Thank you, Ken. Overall, another terrific quarter. I think most significant is the remarkable transformation of our portfolio that is now effectively complete. Both the portfolio and the balance sheet are in excellent shape for the future. At this time, we'd like to open it up for questions.
We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. Our first question comes from R.J. Milligan of Robert Bard. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good morning. This is Will Harmon on for R.J.
Good morning.
Just got a couple questions here. First one is, do you guys have an update on your CFO search and find a replacement for Brian?
Our search continues. You know, we're methodically interviewing a number of candidates currently. Our goal is to have somebody in place in that seat by the first quarter of 2016, and we think we're on track to do so.
Okay, thanks. And then you guys issued a decent amount of equity through your ATM this quarter. Can you talk us through how you thought about the amount that you issued and how you got comfortable issuing at a discount to NAV?
Sure. I think when we look at our ATM, we think, as Ken touched on, it's an efficient means for us to raise and deploy capital to seek to match fund transactions and really tie together sources and uses. Now, uniquely in the third quarter, as everyone may notice, relative to our cash on hand at 9:30, we had a high-quality, long-only investor who came on a reverse inquiry basis, which we transacted on, and that trade settled on 9:30. So we're improving our shareholder base with long-only investors, and we're really seeking to maximize both the efficiency of our capital raising efforts as well as the deployment.
Okay. And then acquisitions slowed a little bit this quarter to about $37 million. Should we read anything into that, or is that just a matter of timing?
Yeah, it's really a matter of timing. You know, transactions aren't necessarily on the traditional calendar. I wouldn't read anything into that. Obviously, through Q3, we've closed $160 million. We're confident that we're on track for to hit our target range of $175 to $200 million for the year. I wouldn't read anything into cap rates or the market from that. It's really just the timing of closings as well as transactions proceeding through diligence.
Okay, and then the last question, can you guys disclose the pricing of your shopping center dispositions in the quarter? And then, you know, how do we think about that over the next 6 months in terms of go-forward dispositions?
Sure, yeah, we've sold six shopping centers in the past 19 months. We've been pretty consistent that we were selling assets from the bottom over the course of the last few years, assets where we weren't comfortable either with the store performance, the credit, or the residuals. And the assets that you see of disposed of in Q3, both Ferris Commons and Lakeland Plaza, were upper single-digit cap rates as compared to the mid-upper teens that we have historically disposed in 2013 and 2014. So, you know, today we're sitting with really 2.5 shopping centers remaining in the portfolio. Frankfort, Kentucky, we have Capitol Plaza, where we're currently adding the ground lease on the recently created outlot, as well as our Central Commons in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Both of those assets are the highest quality shopping center assets we had in the portfolio, frankly, with the most embedded value creation opportunities, and we're going to be patient with those opportunities here. Shopping centers are now down to approximately 2.6% of annualized base rents, and we think that really the two shopping centers we have remaining in the portfolio have significant value.
All right. That's all my questions. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Colin Mings of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, Colin.
Just going really off about last question there. I know it is early, but just as we start thinking about 2016, what do you think is reasonable in terms of a disposition run rate as far as actual volume, just given the progress you guys made here in 2015, call it 40, 50 million of dispositions this year? What do you think is a reasonable run rate as we think about 2016?
That's a good question, Colin. I think first it will depend on where our dispositions close for the quarter here. And we've given the guidance, which is pretty broad, of $40 to $50 million. We've closed on just north of $28 million in terms of dispositions. I think the disposition activity going forward will most likely come from net lease assets as we really look to optimize portfolio composition. And then the redeployment of that capital through the remaining of fourth quarter and first quarter, typically in 1031 transactions, will follow.
Okay, but you think it'll come down a little bit relative to this year in absolute volume terms?
You know, I'll tell you, we are consistently looking at the portfolio for opportunities. In terms of this year, we had almost $18, $19 million in shopping center dispositions, Lakeland being the biggest piece of that, just north of $13 million. So I would tell you that I would anticipate a range that is lower, probably lower than the $40 or $50 million, but I still think it's early for us, and a lot will be dependent on what gets disposed for the remainder of this year.
Okay, fair enough. And then just going back to the deal environment, just again, I guess average cap rate ticked up just a little bit relative to the prior quarter, but again, still trending pretty much around that 8% mark. How do you think about just cap rates right now? Has there been any change? It doesn't sound like there's been much of a change as far as the pipeline based on the answer to your last question, but just how do you think about cap rates right now? Any move?
Yeah, I said previously on earnings calls, we are not the best bellwether for market cap rates. I'll tell you that we remain consistent with that 8% target. We have not noticed any material deviations either up or down in cap rates over the past three quarters or so. But again, we aren't the best market bellwether for those cap rates. You know, our platform is focused on creating and sourcing value and really finding those opportunistic transactions in a highly fragmented large space. So I would anticipate our cap rates remaining consistent. They've been consistent really since we launched the acquisition platform in 2010. And we're looking to continue to transact with similar quality real estate, similar lease term, similar to credit structure and pricing on a go-forward basis.
Okay. And then just as it relates to opportunities out there, obviously pretty successful this year with kind of the opportunistic strategy as far as going after assets. But just have you looked at any more like larger scale deals, maybe a little bit more of a transformative transaction out there, and just maybe update us on if you were seeing any of those opportunities?
Yeah, we look at transactions that range from $1 million into the billions of dollars. Again, our focus is finding the transactions that complement our existing portfolio, that surpass and clear our bottoms up underwriting approach, and the size of those transactions varies across the really across the board. You know, most importantly, we're going to remain disciplined and seek to have the highest quality net lease portfolio in the space with any transactions that we undertake.
Okay, is there any way to maybe think about how aggressive you might want to get with just like a single sale leaseback opportunity? Is there a way to frame that for us at all?
Yeah, I think the best way to think about it really is for any pro forma material concentrations that any single sale leaseback opportunity with a single tenant obviously would create. You know, we really have a soft line of that 5% threshold in terms of tenant concentration. We've done, obviously, a ton of work in terms of diversifying this portfolio. As I mentioned in the prepared remarks, we think that transformation is effectively complete. So today, the only tenant that has a material tenant concentration above 5% is Walgreens. And for us to surpass that 5% line, again, that's a soft line. For us to surpass that 5% line, we would have to think long and hard.
Okay. And then just really one last one from me here, just as you think about your cost of debt right now, Joey, I think the last deal you did, call it like 4.2 at for like 11 years. Just how has your cost of debt moved? Where do you think it is right now if you were to go back to the market on the debt side?
Yeah, I think the short answer is it effectively hasn't moved. The 10-year was at effectively the same rate as when we transacted on the debt private placement. When we did that transaction, we did $50 million in 10-year paper at that 4.16 and the $50 million in 12-year paper at the 4.26, getting to that 4.21 that you mentioned. We're pretty confident that we could transact in the similar market with similar term at those rates.
All right. Thanks, Joey.
Thanks, Colin.
Our next question comes from Dan Donlan of Ladenburg Thalmann. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Joey, just going back to disposition guidance, I think you have about $10 to $20 million left this year to hit you within your guidance range. I was just kind of curious what your cap rate expectations were there. It sounds like you're not going to be selling any of these shopping center assets anytime soon. So we're just curious if we should start seeing the disposition cap rate tick down a little bit and kind of where you think that range is. Is it kind of a 7 to 8% range on a gap basis, or what should we be looking to model in our earnings model?
Yeah, outside of an unanticipated shopping center disposition, I would anticipate that those transactions in the disposition pipeline would transact at roughly a 6.5% cap rate.
Okay. And then as far as the pipeline looks out into next year, you talked about you've been pretty consistent with the 8%, but Is there anything you think that's on the horizon that would cause you to, potentially change your thought process? Is there anything else that's in the marketplace that's influencing cap rates one way or the other that we should be cognizant of?
No, we don't see any market conditions that are going to cause us to change our underwriting criteria. We don't have anything in the pipeline today that's going to be a deviation from our underwriting criteria. Consistency again. I think we've demonstrated that since 2010, and we're confident that we can continue to deploy capital in high-quality net lease retail opportunities at these rates.
Okay, and then as it pertains to the joint venture development solutions program, you seem to have done a lot of Hobby Lobbies, but there hasn't been as much in maybe some other retailers. How is that progressing? And do you see kind of moving away from, Hobby Lobby and maybe some other retailers?
Yeah, just for clarification, the Hobby Lobby project in Springfield, Ohio, is currently under construction, was not part of our joint venture capital solutions program. That is a organic development project for Hobby Lobby. So that was not a joint venture project. However, we have done a joint venture project historically for Hobby Lobby. So the cash and carry project in Salem, Oregon, is with a repeat partner that is a joint venture capital solutions project, the second cash and carry that we've undertaken with that partner who we have a long relationship with. Now, our goal for the joint venture project is really to secure a handful of developers, let's call it 3 to 5 developers, who are bringing to market 3 to 5 projects per year at an average price point of, let's use $4 million. Market conditions aside, that is our medium-term goal. It is really to leverage our balance sheet, our access to capital, our cost of capital, our development expertise, and our tenant relationships, as well as our partners' ability to source and secure opportunities. And we see that program materializing to that level in the medium term. So we're focused on it. Obviously, the merchant build environment that we have out there today within a low cap rate environment is an obstacle to really seeing this project, this platform to fruition. But that's our goal. It's really to secure a handful of critical partners, 3 to 5 critical partners that can leverage those things that we bring to the table there.
Okay, understood. Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Dan.
Our next question comes from Wilkes Graham of Compass Point. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Joey. Just really one question for me. I think it's probably a follow-up to some of the others. You've done a great job, paring down the portfolio and getting rid of some of the lower credit tenants like the Kmarts and improving the overall credit quality. You know, I look at most of your dispositions to date as, you know, being a part of that effort. So as you look going into 2016, how do you, you know, what are your priorities for the portfolio and the balance sheet going forward between acquisitions, dispositions, and developments? And you know, would you, you know, how close are you to, or how much do you think about selling off some of your higher quality assets to take advantage of cap rates in the market?
So let's start with the last question. We anticipate, again, outside Wilkes, of and frankly an unplanned shopping center disposition in 2015. For the remainder of our dispositions in the near term to be what we would call non-core net lease assets. And those will be notable names in our tenant roster, either store performance or residuals that we're not comfortable with, or something that forces us to look at the asset, potentially even pricing, an opportunistic pricing. So I think in terms of dispositions, we are going to remain active asset managers, true to our real estate roots, and focus on those qualities, similar to our acquisition platform. You know, our priorities going into 2016, frankly, are to continue to build upon our 3 external growth platforms, acquisition, development, as well as our joint venture capital solutions programs, and really to build and scale those platforms and to continue to be able to enter a net lease retail transaction anywhere along the life cycle of that transaction, from site selection with our retail partners, all the way through acquisition from a third party or on a sale-leaseback basis. And those capabilities and those qualities are very unique in our space. They speak to our real estate roots, and they speak to the relationships that we have across the board with retailers, brokers, developers, and the like. So I think you're going to see more of the same from this company. I think if you look at this quarter and a point in time, what I'm most pleased with is if you look at our portfolio today, we're sitting here with a portfolio that's nearly 53% investment grade. We've obviously actively managed the portfolio, selling 6 shopping centers in the last 19 months. We've invested over the course of the last few years over $600 million into specifically retail net lease, and we've created value and sourced value that is atypical of what we see in the marketplace. And that's the DNA of this organization, and those are the core values of this organization, and we're confident that we can continue to grow and build upon the platforms that we've already established.
And just one follow-up, as you tap into your network of sources, is if you compare this to maybe a year ago or earlier this year, is it any harder to source the types of acquisitions that fit your underwriting criteria, and the same on the development side? Are the opportunities, is it getting harder to find those opportunities, or is it the same, and we expect to see the same level of growth going forward?
Well, I'll tell you, from an acquisition perspective, we've seen the number to $2 trillion space. I'll tell you that transactions at any point in time can materialize. We haven't found it more difficult to source transactions. Yes, sectors have become more competitive, and we don't anticipate fast food sector transacting in the fast food sector, similar to the quick service restaurant sector, similar to how we did it at year-end 2014, because, frankly, cap rates and rent-to-sales ratios, we think, have gotten out of whack on the transactions that we see. And so I'll tell you that we see sectors trend, but overall it is such a highly fragmented, large space, and the team here is doing such a great job of building relationships and sourcing opportunities that we don't see any material deviations today or on the horizon. Again, we are really sourcing and targeting a needle in a haystack here. We're targeting a couple $100 million at the top end of our range in a space that sees multiple billions of dollars transact on an annual basis. So we don't see any change there. You know, in terms of development, the development world is dominated by merchant builders, private developers who are typically constructing and developing assets for retailers, then putting them on the market and selling 1031 or private purchasers. We've been very clear that we are not going to undertake a 2 to 3 year development process for returns that are substandard. Our development returns are superior to the market. They're superior overall to our other investment dollars that we put to work, and we're going to remain stringent and diligent in terms of how we deploy those dollars in high-quality opportunities. That can change. That is built upon relationships, and the team here is focused on working with existing tenants in our portfolio as well as new tenants on sourcing those opportunities. But overall, we think we are able, through the three platforms, to continue to deploy north of $200 million on an accretive basis that fit our underwriting criteria.
Thanks, Joey. I appreciate it.
Thanks, folks.
Again, if you have a question, please press star, then one. Seeing no further questions, this concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Joey Agree for any closing remarks.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up. Again, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today, and we look forward to speaking with you in 2016. Thank you.
This concludes our conference. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect your lines. Have a great day.
You have reached the end of playback for this conference recording. Press 2 to go to the